Greetings and welcome back to our weekly inquiry into Parashat HaShavua. This week, of course, is the week of Parashat Zachor. It's Shabbat Zachor, coming immediately before Purim. And so we're going to take a look at Parashat Zachor. We're also going to take a look primarily, really, at the Kriyat HaTorah on Sunday morning, which is the actual story of Amalek that we are supposed to remember, which is what we're reminded of in Dvarim in Parashat Zachor. And as we will see immediately, and you can see it from the title of the shiur, there seems to be a contradiction in the command regarding wiping out Amalek. Take a look in Source 1. We have the story of the war, and Moshe, Aaron, and Hur go up to the top of the mountain. Yoshua leads the battle below. And after the battle is, shall we say, stalemated, meaning Yoshua wins, but Amalek is not defeated, they leave. They're weakened. We find the following commands, and this is in the big print, Pasuk Yod Dalet. Vayomer Adonai Moshe, Ktov Zod Zikaron Basefer, Vesim Bozne Yoshua. Now, each of those phrases is difficult. That's why they're highlighted on the source sheets, and we're going to investigate them in a few minutes. But first, what is it that you're supposed to write and tell Yoshua about? Ki Macho Emche Et Zecher Amalek. Hashem promises he is going to eradicate Amalek, even the memory of Amalek, Mitachat Hashemayim. Then we move ahead to Parshat Zachor, which is Source 2, which is at the end of Parshat Ki Tetzé, at the end of Perakafe of Dvarim. Zachor Eit Asher Asalach Amalek, Baderach Betzitchem Mitzrayim. And Pasuk Yod Ched is a description of what they did. And Pasuk Yod Ted is the command. Vayab Aniach Adonai L'racha L'cha Mikol Oivecha Misaviv. Ba'aretz Asher Adonai L'racha Noten L'cha Nechala L'rishta. Here we go. Timche et zecher Amalek. You must eradicate the memory of Amalek. Same phrase, mitachat hashamayim, and then lo tishkach. So, which is it? Is it emche or timche? Is God promising he will wipe out Amalek, or are we the ones responsible for wiping out Amalek? Now, reality is the Rishonim, by and large, don't address this seeming contradiction. However, we will see that the Sifri does address it. Take a look at Source 6, where the Sifri makes a comment addressing the seeming contradiction with no real resolution. As you could see, Timche et Zecher Amalek, Source 6, Ulalan hu omer ki macho emche et Zecher Amalek. So this comment is in the Sifri on Dvarim, and it's referencing back to Shmot, and identifies the problem. V'omer ki yad al kes yad milchama l'Adonai ba'amalek. And then quotes the last pasuk in the parsha of Vayavo Amalek. Take a look back at pasuk Tet Zayin on the first source. Vayomer ki yad al kesia, involving literally a hand on the throne of God, seeming to be some sort of an oath. Milchama l'Adonai ba'amalek. God has a war with Amalek. Midor dor. The only problem is that the Sifri identified the contradiction and didn't really offer a solution to it. So if you look in some of the critical editions of the Sifri, you'll see that the Gra has a whole different girsa of this Midrash, and Source 7. We'll take a look at it. Notice, not as a challenge, but rather, similarly it says, right? What is that? Now we're interpreting what it means to be mochem mitachat hashamayim. Shelo yanin v'nechad Amalek tachat hashamayim. There should be no descendants of Amalek left. V'omer, and now ki yad al kes yad mechama l'Adonai b'Amalek midor dor, is interpreted as nishpa hakadosh baruch hu. You see how different this girsa is. V'chisei hakavod shelo, God took an oath by his throne. Shelo yaniach nin v'nechad shel Amalek v'lo gamal v'lo chamor tachat hakol hashamayim. Nothing will be left of Amalek. Shelo yamru gamal zeh shel Amalek. People shouldn't say, oh yeah, that's Amalek's gamal. Amalek's name shouldn't be mentioned for the descendant, the property, or anything else in any way. But now that means that the Sifri is not addressing our contradiction at all, and almost the opposite is reading the two psukim as sympathetic and quoting them both and saying this is what it means. In Finkelstein's notes on the Sifri, he identifies what may be the larger version of the original Sifri that we have, which is in Source 6, from the Psikta de Rav Kahana. Take a look at it in Source 8, as follows. Rabbi Shimon Levi, B'Shimra Alexandri, Katuv Echad Omer, Timcha Et Zecher Amalek, Katuv Echad Omer, Kimacho Emcha Et Zecher Amalek. You see the contradiction. Haketzad, Yitkaymu Shnei Ketuvim, how do both psukim stay real, meaning they contradict each other? Eliyavua, Ketuvah Shlishi, Achriya Beneam. You were borrowing from the famous 13 hermeneutical rules of Rabbi Yishmael. Number 13 is, Shnei Ketuvim HaMachishim Zed Zed, two psukim that contradict each other, until you have a third pasuk that comes and creates some sort of a resolution, a reconciliation between the psukim. And what's that pasuk? In other words, you could see the fragment that ended up in our Sifri, but here's the whole thing, is this is the third pasuk that resolves them. How? Ad shelo pashat yado b'kisei, before Amalek tried to hurt the throne of God, Amar Timched Zecher Amalek, meaning Amalek fought against you, you wiped them out. But once Amalek tried to threaten the throne of God, or actually attack the throne of God, Amar Kimacho Emched Zecher Amalek. Right? So then God changed it to, I will wipe out Amalek, not you. Meaning, now Amalek has attacked me, so I'm going to wipe out Amalek. And so that the Yad al Kesia becomes the turning point where it switches from Timchet to Emchet. And now the side question, which is on everybody's mind, V'chi efshar basav adam yachol lifshot yadav v'kisei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Can any person, human, tribe of nomads, like Amalek, can actually touch and hurt the throne of God? El ayidei shechriv Yerushalayim. Now this is strange, because this is really nowhere in our Tanakh that Amalek was involved in the destruction of Yerushalayim. Dichti ba'etahi k'ru Yerushalayim kisei Adonai. That Yerushalayim will be referred to as the throne of God. So therefore, destroying Yerushalayim is destroying the throne of God. Attacking Yerushalayim would be that. And somehow Amalek's involved with that. L'fichach demarki macho emcha. That God himself is going to wipe them out. Okay, we get the resolution. There's two problems with the resolution. Problem number one is that we don't have a record of Amalek ever attacking Yerushalayim or the Beit HaMikdash. The second problem we have is that the texts are now reversed. In other words, the text in the original story that when Amalek attacks is Macho Emche. And later, in Sefer Dvarim, a generation later, to the generation that's about to enter the land, it's Timche. But the way the Sifri tells it, Timche was the original command, and only at some point in history when Amalek attacked Kisei Hashem did become Emche, I will destroy. So the Sifri recognizes that there's a contradiction and presents a reconciliation between the two psukim so that we see them as sequenced. We move from Timche to Emche. The only problem is the sequence of the Torah goes the opposite direction from Emche to Timche. So we have perhaps the groundwork for solving this, but we still need to figure it out. In the meantime, as I promised, there's other passages here in the Parsha of Vayavo Amalek that are difficult, and they're highlighted on the page in source one, in the first page. And that is, first of all, Ketov Zot Zikaron Basefer. After the successful battle against Amalek, Hashem tells Moshe, write this for a commemoration, a memorial, Ba Sefer. Now, what does Ba Sefer mean? If it said bis sefer, it would be take a scroll and write it in there. Bas sefer implies the known book, meaning there's a book that we know about, and write this in there. Because we're using the definite article. Bas sefer is an abbreviated version of beha sefer. Very nice. What sefer do we have? By the way, this is the first time the word sefer shows up in Tanakh. There is no sefer mentioned earlier. So what is it? Except, of course, in Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam, but that's a different reference. But in the context of narrative, we don't have an actual sefer showing up. We'll have Sefer Abrit later on, and then Mi Asher Chatali Yemchenu Mi Sifri later on. That's with the Egel, and before with Matan Torah. But here with pre-Matan Torah, there's no sefer. So what sefer is being referred to? So take a look at the Ibn Ezra. Source 3. He says, Vayom Ktov Zot Zikaron Basefer Hanoda. Ibn Ezra picks up on the fact that there's a definite article, and he says, write it in the book that's a known book, meaning it's an already a known entity. And what's that? V'hu Sefer Milchamot Hashem. Now this takes us to the Ibn Ezra's famous comments in Bamidbar Chaf Aleph. We'll see the Pasuki comments on, but they're almost the same here. in which he points out, Veinenu itanu kasher inanu sefer hayashar, midrash ido, v'divrei hayim malchei Yisrael, v'sifrei Shlomo. He identifies a number of books that are referenced throughout Tanakh that are books we don't have. And it says these are books that existed back then, and they're lost to us. One of them is the famous Sefer HaYashar, which includes the story of Yoshua stopping the sun and the moon, and includes the lament for Shaul and Yonatan. At least those are the two places mentioned in Tanakh. There's Midrash Ido, which is mentioned in Dvar HaYamim, and there's Sefer Melchamot Hashem. Sefer Melchamot Hashem, the Ibn Ezra explains in Bamidbar, is a book where they kept a record of all of the wars that Hashem fought for us in the Midbar, and they wrote them down in there. And so this should be also written in Sefer Melchamot Hashem. We don't have it, so we can't see it, but that's where it was written. That's what Moshe was told to do. We're still wondering what Simbo's Ne'oshua is, but we'll get to that. In the meantime, there is a bit of a difficulty about this because we've never heard of Sefer Melchamot Hashem. So Ktov Zot Zikaron Basefer sort of assumes that we know what book it is. The Sforno, as you see in Source 4, takes a different approach. Ktov Zot Zikaron Basefer, he says that's Parshat Zachor. In other words, the story of the war against Amalek is written in Shemot as part of the narrative. And Hashem then commands him, write it in Dvarim, meaning write the command to remember what Amalek did and to wipe them out, write that in Dvarim, Parshat Zachor. It's very straightforward. There's, of course, a problem here, because that assumes that when Hashem is speaking to Moshe in Source 1, he's speaking to him at the end of the 40 years and telling him, write it in the Sefer, dying of the Sefer that you are writing now, which is the Sefer Torah that Moshe is writing at the end of his life, which includes everything, including the mitzvah of Mechiyat Amalek. Now, that's not very difficult. We have numerous passages, specifically in Sefer Shemot, which seem to belong to the end of the 40 years, most notably the chapter right before this one, the story of the man ends off with a report of the man being placed in front of the Aron, which of course doesn't exist yet, and the Bnei Yisrael ate the man for 40 years, which of course it doesn't exist yet. And so, as the Ramban points out, those were added in by Moshe at the end of the 40 years. So this is added in also, not so bad. We'll see if there's other approaches. So Shaddal here says the following. He disagrees with Ibn Ezra straightforward and says the fact that it says Bas Sefer doesn't have to mean that it's an already known book. And the use of the definite article here could be just a use of language. And so he takes from really modern Hebrew, although he's towards the end of the 19th century. But spoken Hebrew, we say, write it on a piece of paper. We actually say, Ktov al Haniyar, even though Haniyar, the paper, is not a particular piece of paper that was already referenced. But he also has a pasuk from Iov that supports this, which is a lot better to have a pasuk in Tanakh. V'chein mi yitein basefer v'yuchaku. Can somebody write these things in a book and they could be engraved? Well, the book, Bas Sefer, and yet he's talking about a Sefer that doesn't exist yet. I wish it were written in a book, but it used Bas Sefer. So the Shaddal says, you see, in regular Hebrew, in spoken Hebrew, and also in Tanakh, you can sometimes have a referent which has the definite article, and yet it's one that's been unknown heretofore. And Dafka Sefer is one that's used here. So he says, Ktov Zot Zikaron Bas Sefer means write it in a book. Okay, very good. So we have several possibilities. We're going to return to Ibn Ezra's Sefer Melchamot Hashem a little bit later on. But I want to point out the second problem here. Sim Bozne Yehoshua. Now look at the pasuk itself. Ktov Zot Zikaron Basefer. Write this. And this seems to be the war with Amalek, the success against Amalek, Yoshua's involvement, Moshe, Aaron, Bechor on top of the mountain, whatever components of the story. Write it as Zikaron Basefer. Vesim Bozne Yehoshua. Now, the phrase, lasim boznaim, is singular. It doesn't exist anywhere else in Tanakh, to put it in the ears. So there's something special going on here that's a unique phrase. But you got to wonder, what is it he's putting in his ears? Now, by the way, this would have been a great opportunity for someone to pick up and speak about Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaalpeh, write it in the Sefer, and then Baalpeh, orally, you tell Yoshua details that are left out of the written event. Would have been great. I haven't seen that. But Simbo's name Yoshua seems to be superfluous here, because if you're writing it in the Sefer, why do you have to tell Yoshua? Very difficult. So Shaddal, as you can see at the bottom of the page in Source 5, goes through different approaches of what Simbo's Ne Yoshua means. He, first of all, points out, L'matzanu makom acher l'itzat Simbo's Ne Ploni. So this phrase, put it in the ears of someone, doesn't exist anywhere else in Tanakh. And then he quotes Rashi, who says, put it in Yoshua's ears, because Yoshua is going to be the one who's going to enter the land, and that he should tell Bnei Yisrael to go pay Amalek back. He says that's very difficult. He says for two reasons. First of all, because even though Hashem knew that Moshe was not going to lead them into the land, nonetheless, to tell Moshe this early in his career, right after Yitziat Mitzrayim, that Moshe is not going to be the one to lead them in, would weaken his own stance, both publicly, but also internally. He says, Hayam Raped Yadav. So the Rashbam and the Ibn Ezra kind of lighten that up a little bit. I'm paraphrasing the Shaddal. And he says that Yoshua was going to be the one to lead them in and to go to war against Anshei Canaan. So you still have the same problem that we before, is why is Moshe being told this early in the process of Yitziat Mitzrayim? But you have a different difficulty, because Yoshua never fought Amalek. The Amalek shows up first, really, in Sefer Shoftim, meaning post-Chumash, in Sefer Shoftim in a few places, and then, of course, famously in several places in Sefer Shmuel. And so what would be the point of that, right? And so, therefore, he then quotes the Ramban, says, Simbo's Ne Yoshua, he says it's Yoshua's job to remind Yisrael about the terrible thing that Amalek did, to maintain your enmity towards them, etc. But he said, I don't understand that either, because why do you need that? Everybody there was there, meaning Yoshua was there and everybody else was there, and they all know it. So what's the point of telling him that? So the Shaddal's questions are very strong. His answer is as follows, and look at the last two lines. V'nireli, shakavana emor bo'oznav v'hu yichtov. Meaning, Shaddal is reading the pasuk sort of misuras, meaning the order is a little bit different. Meaning, you tell Yoshua and let him write. So the way you might read it is, Sim bo'oznei Yoshua shi'ichtov zot zikaron ba'sefer. And that's the weakness in his comment. But he explains where he's coming from. He says, K'mosh milchemet Amalek Moshe tzivav Yoshua nelcham. Just like the war itself, Moshe commanded and Yoshua went to work and fought. King Tivata Me'ora, also writing it down, Moshe yomar Yoshua yichtov. Moshe should tell Yoshua, that's Simbo's Ne Yoshua, and Yoshua should be the one to write it down. Vayam bezeh nachat ruach liYoshua chavod v'yakar chelef oratov machaman. That was like a prize and a bonus for Yoshua. For his involvement in the war. Well, Shaddal's questions and challenges are strong. The answer seems to be kind of weak for several reasons. First of all, the order of the pasuk is, as I pointed out, backwards. It should be Vayomra Hashem el Moshe, Sim bo zne Yoshua sheyichtov zot zikaron ba'sefer, or viyichtov, or asher yichtov zot zikaron ba'sefer. Instead, it's ktov zot zikaron ba'sefer, and then v'sim bo zne Yoshua. Now, this interpretation of Shaddal really depends on looking at the vav in front of the word v'sim in something of a unique, not a unique way, but not the standard way. The standard way we would look at a vav like this, a vav before a verb, not a conversive vav that's changing the tense of the verb, is simple vav achibur, a simple conjunctive vav. It would be two things to do, do this and do that. Write it in a book and tell it to Yoshua. The Shaddal is reading the Vav as something of a Vav HaBi'ur, meaning a Vav of explanation, which we have numerous in Tanakh. And it would mean, write this in a book. How do you do that? By telling Yoshua. But then again, it's difficult because, again, the order of the Pasuk is difficult. So at the end, I'll suggest a different way, perhaps, of understanding what this whole Simbo's Ne Yoshua component is. But let's think about a little bit about Ktov Zot Zikaron Basefer. I'd like to go back, as I mentioned, to the approach of the Ibn Ezra that we're talking about, Sefer Melchamot Hashem. But to take a look at it from a slightly different angle. And again, picking up on the Sifri in the expanded version that we saw in the Psikta, that the difference between Emche and Timche is one of motivation in the war. And the motivation, if the motivation in the war is this is a national enemy, the nation has to fight Timche, or this is an enemy of God, and therefore God will fight Emche, is the way that the Sifri reads it, using the Kiyal Kesia as the pivot point of that. But as I pointed out, the sequence is difficult. Perhaps we should see it from almost the opposite perspective. And there's two ways to look at this, which are, at first glance, opposite approaches, one sort of depressing and one of them sort of hopeful. But in the end, I think they actually come out to work together. So let's take a look. I'd like to start with this. If you look at sources 9 through 12, this is a sampling of some of the books that Ibn Ezra mentioned that are referenced in Tanakh. And you'll notice something unusual about Sefer Milchamot Hashem. In source 10 and 11, which mentions Sefer HaYashar, in both cases it says Ketuvah, Sefer HaYashar. It's written in Sefer HaYashar. In Melachim Aleph, just after Yerovam and Nevat dies, and there's the mini eulogy for him, says all of the things that he did, Hinam Ketuvim, they're written in Sefer Divrei Hayamim, Malchei Yisrael, meaning they're there. But when it comes to Sefer Milchamot Hashem, which, as I mentioned, is mentioned in Bamidbar Chaf Aleph, in the middle of Parshat Chukat, in the story of some of the wars that Bnei Yisrael fought in Nachal Arnon, in crossing over towards the East Bank, the phrasing is Alken Ye Amar B'Sefer Milchamot Hashem. Therefore, it is said, or perhaps it would be said, in Sefer Milchamot Hashem, instead of Alken Katuv B'Sefer Milchamot Hashem. Why is that? Why doesn't it record? And in Sefer Milchamot Hashem, it says, Ed vahev v'sufa v'tanchalin anon, v'eshet anchalim, etc., etc. So perhaps it means that this wasn't written in Sefer Milchamot Hashem, but it would have been written in Sefer Milchamot Hashem. This is the kind of battle that would have been written. Now, we could take a page from the Ibn Ezra and just extend it backwards and say, maybe Sefer Milchamot Hashem was no longer around even at that time. Meaning, if we had it, that's what we would write this in it. We don't have it. But that, of course, makes no sense because, so start another Sefer Milchamot Hashem. In other words, if you had a Sefer Milchamot Hashem and somewhere in the desert was lost, which also doesn't make sense, then start another one. But maybe there's something else going on. Maybe Sefer Milchamot Hashem is a Sefer that existed when the Milchamot were directly Milchamot Hashem. I'll explain what I mean. Remember, when we left Mitzrayim, we had experienced several months or longer on end of nonstop Gilui Shechina, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Nechodo V'atzmo, intervening, punishing, releasing, splitting the sea. All of these things were Yad Hashem. For Yahweh saw the Yad Hashem, Ayad Agdola, Etzpa Elohimi, it's God manifest in Mitzrayim and at Yam Suf and in the Midbar. God is right there. And we see a description of that. If you take a look in passage in source 13, at Yam Suf, when Bnei Yisrael are complaining, Moshe says, don't do anything. Adonai Yilachem Lachem, V'yatem Tacharishun. You can be quiet. Hashem is fighting for you. And indeed, the Egyptians recognize that. Because when the Egyptians start to run out of Yam Suf, when they're chariots get flooded and muddied and stuck in the bottom, they say, Vayom Mitzrayim, the rest of source 13, Anusa bnei Yisrael, I'm going to run away from Yisrael, ki Adonai nocham lahem b'Mitzrayim, because God's fighting for them. Everybody recognizes this. God's fighting for them. And by the way, you see that in the War of Amalek. I took one passage from source 1 and copied it here in source 14. It's a pasuk we all know well because we know the midrash on it. When Moshe, Aaron, and Hur go to the top of the mountain, it says, Vayak asher yarim Moshe yadov gavar Yisrael, v'chasher aniach yadov gavar Amalek. When Moshe picked his hands up, Am Yisrael was winning in the war. And when his hands went down, Amalek was winning in the war. And then Aaron and Hur take a rock. Moshe sits on the rock. They hold his hands up. His hands are up there all the way till the end of the day. And we're victorious. Now, there's a famous midrash. It's in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. V'chiyadav sh'moshe osod melchama. Do you think his hands actually make melchama? Rather, it means that Bnei Yisrael would look heavenwards and they would daven and they'd be successful. And if they didn't, they would lose. They would retreat, as it were. But that's not pshat. The simple pshat here is that Moshe lifting his hands up actually helped the war effort, and lowering them didn't, which means this is a Melchemet Hashem. So you have to ask the question, if Moshe could lift his hands and we win, so why didn't you just keep them up till we totally wiped them out? Why does Yehoshua only weaken them and they get away? It must be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, that's all I'm going to let you do right now. This is my war, and I'm going to have them only be weakened, and then later on I'm going to finish them off. Emched, Zechar Malek, Mitachat HaShemayim. In the meantime, they're going to stick around. Okay? What changed? So we came to Har Sinai. Again, Gilui Shechina, Matan Torah, Mamad Har Sinai. Smoke, lightning, thunder, everything. And then we made an eagle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's immediate response to the eagle was, I'm going to destroy them. Moshe pleads for forgiveness, something that we're going to hear in a few hours in Kriyat HaTorah and the Ta'anit. And Hashem forgives us. But take a look at Source 15. Vaydaber Adonai Moshe, Lech alei mizeh, ata ve'am asher alita me'eretz Yisrael. Hashem says, okay, I've forgiven you, but now you go and you take the people out, and the people that you took out of Mitzrayim, El Ha'aretz Shenishbat Avraham Yitzchak LeYaakov LeMor Zarachat Nena, take them to the land that I promised. V'shalachti lefanecha malach, I am going to send a malach in front of you. V'gerashti et haknani amori v'achiti v'arizi achibi v'usi, and I will chase away, meaning I'm going to send a malach, and I will be with him, as it were, or he'll be representing me, and he'll chase away all the nations, and they'll leave the land, and you'll conquer the land. Why? Ki lo elev kirbacha. I will no longer manifest my presence with you. You are stubborn, and I might wipe you out. Meaning, it's too dangerous for me to be in your presence because you sinned. If you sin again, that could be the end of it. So I'm going to keep my distance. Now, a little later on, Moshe pushes the envelope. Not only does he gain forgiveness, but he wants to roll things back to the way they originally were. Take a look in Source 16. Moshe al Adonai. Re'atal me'elai halatam azeh v'atal odetani tashet tishlachim mi. You're telling me to bring the people up, but you haven't told me who you're going to send. V'atal ma'atid daticha v'shem v'gam atzat achein b'inai. But you also told me that you favored me, which means I've got some pull. All right, I'm going to be a big ask. V'ata, im na matzat achein b'inach, if that's true, that I found favor in your eyes, ho'di'enin adrachach v'edacha l'manan tzachein b'inacha. Please tell me your ways, explain your ways. And you see that these are your people. Now, the whole request is itself inscrutable, hard to figure out what he's asking for, but listen to Hashem's answer. My face will go with you, which most of the Rishonim understand, but look at the Ramban. Most of the Rishonim understand mean that Hashem is rolling back from his statement of saying, I'm going to send a malach, rather, I will go with you. Okay, which means things should be back where they were. But notice what Moshe says. If you're not with us, then don't lead us out of here. Don't bring us up from out of here. Meaning that what Moshe's negotiating is, we want your presence to be with us as you lead us into the land. But the rest of it, we understand there's going to be a malach. The rest of it's going to be in our hands. In other words, there is a lessening of the intense presence of the Shekhinah. However we understand it metaphysically, theologically, spiritually, mystically, there is less of an intensity of the presence of the Shekhinah among Am Yisrael after the Chet HaEgel. And Hashem concedes that when we go to war, he's going to lead us in up into the land, but not in the land itself. Now, notice what the charge is that Moshe gives the soldiers. Moshe says that the Kohen HaMashiach should give the soldiers before going into war. Ki Adonai v'chem ha'olechim achem lachem lachem v'chem hoshiatchem. God is with you, but you're fighting the war. God is with you and he'll help you. He'll work with you, but it's not God's war anymore. It's your war, meaning it's a joint war. It's no longer Hashem yilachem lachem v'yatem tacharishun. Now this can be seen, as I said, in a positive way and a negative way. The negative way, of course, is to see that there's a drop-off of the intensity of the Shekhinah as a result of Chet HaEgel. We've sinned, and therefore God is more distant from us, as it were. And as a result of that, the God fighting our war is no longer the singular reality. If that's the case, we understand what happened. Before Cheta Egel, it's Macho Emched Zechar Malek. But now that we're in Sefer Dvarim, it's Timched Zechar Malek. It's your responsibility. Now you've got to do it. It's your war to fight. But we can take that same component and turn it in upside down and see the ray of sunshine, not just the silver lining, the ray of sunshine in it, which is that at the beginning of our nationhood, we need total help. We can't do anything for ourselves. And therefore, Hashem does everything for us. You sit back and watch, and Hashem is going to put the Egyptians, going to drown the Egyptians. You sit back, and every morning there's going to be food outside your tent, outside in the camp. And as we grow as a people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu invests us with more obligation, responsibility, and the opportunity for initiative, which we see develop in the Midbar, sometimes in extensive and bad ways, rebellious ways, but sometimes in really good ways. And as a result of that, we have sort of grabbed the horns of the obligation and made it something of our own. As a result of that, by the time it comes to Sefer Dvarim, it's no longer Im Emche, it's now Timche. Meaning, look at the whole pasuk. When God puts your enemies to rest, then you go wipe out Amalek, which means we're working together on this. But now you also play an active role. It's no longer just Emche. And so the same development can be seen through the lens of Cheta Egel as a negative, or it can see just through the broader lens of the development of the nation, and therefore, as a positive of now you can take responsibility for this war of Timche. Now let's see this back in those two odd phrases. Vayomar Adonai Moshe, tov zot zikaron basefer. Meaning, if all it was going to be is that Hashem is going to wipe out Amalek, there's no need to write it down. Hashem will wipe out Amalek. You don't have to do anything. And so he says, tov zot zikaron basefer, meaning, you write this down in HaSefer, and HaSefer, I think like the Sfono says, refers to the Sefer Torah. Write this down in the Sefer Torah, year 40, right? Because this is going to be something I will hand over to you. And what's a Simba Ozne Yehoshua? You have to tell Yehoshua that the war that you fought now is going to be a war that you're going to continue fighting, and I'm going to be the one fighting it for you, as it were, Macho Emche. And so that's the particular charge to Yehoshua, that he's supposed to continue. What happens by the time we get to Sefer Dvarim? Things have changed dramatically. Not only Cheta Egel, but far more impactful is Cheta Meraglim. As a result of that, Am Yisrael is delayed by a generation. Am Yisrael's route is changed. As opposed to coming up through the Negev, where the first enemy they would meet would be Amalek. Now they're going to be coming in and they won't even see Amalek for a generation that we know of. And they're not going to fight against them till we get to Sefer Shoftim. And as a result of that, Simbo's name Yehoshua is really directed to what should have been happening immediately. Yehoshua, you're going to meet Amalek again. You're going to fight the war. And then I'm going to help you finish it off. Macho Emche. That was Simbo's name Yehoshua. Meantime, things did not play out that way, and that's why Yeshua's name is not mentioned in Parshat Zachor. Because by that time, the route has changed, the history has changed, the destiny has changed, and Yeshua's role here now becomes a single-time role in the original war against Amalek, and that's it. So what we've looked at here is the contradiction between Emche and Timche, and discovered a lot of folds in between them. Difficult passages, Ktov Zot Zikaron Sefer. Difficult passages, Sim Bozne Yehoshua. And the difficulty in the Sifri with this passage of seeing the contradiction and the potential resolution, and it turns out the resolution goes in the opposite direction. That it starts as Emche because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fighting all of our wars. By the time we get to the next generation, we're entering the land, we are now taking responsibility for our role in the wars, and therefore, Adonai Elohim, Alechim Achem, Lachem Lachem Avechem, Timche et Zecher Amalek.